What is it about this industry that which takes so many likes?
We live in a social media bubble where everyone sits on Instagram and they just flick and flick and they see a life that isn't realistic. And just because I see Hamish from Sanctum Homes building these beautiful homes, he must be so good. He must have everything. He must have so much money. You don't know what happens behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on. But the perception from everyone in society is like, that's awesome. Like, I know people that put stuff up online and it sucks for their life behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But the visual of it and the just insecurity to try keep up with everyone else, I think that's the problem that we have. We've been taught to work harder and 9 to 5 isn't enough. And it's got a great business to have 30 and 40 employees. Some people are just happy just working by themselves.
Hey team, things are going to look a little different coming up. But this is a good thing. Sometimes change is hard and it's something that we have been working on in the background for a little while now. Honestly, change is good. It's the whole reason Hamish and I started the podcast and we feel the building industry needs it. Oh, and by the way, I'm Matt, Hamish's co-host who loves to poke the bear. But what's cool is we are now recording from the ProClimber Australia Studios, who are our major sponsor of our podcast. It's like the perfect combination. We're kind of like Batman and Robin fighting the crime against an outdated, crappy building industry. With a perfect combination of pushing boundaries, sharing our knowledge, and starting real conversation about how we can improve the industry. Of course, I'm Batman, and really, Hamish is a little bit more like Alfred. Anyway, enjoy today's episode, which is coming directly from the ProClimber Built to Last studio.
So this is episode number 2 with Liam. I think last time we recorded with you, we're actually in the space where you're about to start construction for Park Life 2. And this is the reason why we wanted to get you in today, because
cool.
Sustainable development, you know, developers, you know, there's a lot of virtue signaling when it comes to this kind of stuff in the industry. But, you know, we've known each other for a long time and seeing what you guys do with Hipburst Hype, like you guys are actually doing it. In my opinion, from what I see from the outside looking in, you guys are actually doing it. So thanks for coming back in. And you know, we'd love to talk through Park Life 2 today and, you know, what problems you are trying to solve with this particular construction.
We probably covered it last time we caught up, but I guess our approach to improvement is iterative. And I think that's a really, really important point because, you know, you can only do so much at any given point in time. One thing that we've actually been working on over the summer, because what is it now? We're sort of early February. Construction industry is such a great time to sort of get your head out of operational.
I know for me, taking that through 3 weeks off where I am disconnected from work, if I didn't do that, you know, I'm with my family, I'm at the beach, I'm surfing, I'm bike riding, right? If I didn't do that, then I wouldn't be showing up and doing what I'm doing now.
No, it's a really important point. But again, left side, right side, because I'm not one of these people that re-energizes by switching off. I'm a person that re-energizes by flipping between the different ways that I think. And for me, contrast is energizing. You know, through January this year, to get back to that original point, we were working through, Harry from our team and I were working through a procurement map for us, which is seeking to capture each of the elements of our process through each phase of procurement. Because the life cycle of the projects that we work on are long, you know, it's 4 to 5 years from the very beginning to when you get people moved in, and then a year of commissioning the projects.
That's pretty good. I thought it would have been longer. I would have thought it'd be like 8 years.
What that means is you forget stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So from, you know, 4 years ago, people from the team come and go, you just mentally can't hold that information in your head. So capturing that at each phase of the process and setting up an ability for us to capture, learn, and iteratively improve. So we review that procurement map quarterly. At whatever stage we're in on any given project, it gives us a checklist. You know, what are we just done? How does that compare to what we've done previously? And what do we have coming up in the next quarter? What do we need to think about? What do we need to plan for? And for us, with our broader improvement agenda, that's really, really critical because it gives us an ability to be strategic as opposed to reactive. You know, you're always chasing your tail, but how can you set systems and processes up in a way that you can foresee what's coming next.
What you just explained is relevant for every business. You know, you and I, we had Dave Jennings from Systemology on talking about systems, and this, what you're talking about right now is exactly that. It's like dialing your systems, not getting it perfect, but then reviewing them and making them better. And, you know, you said that you're, over the years, Hip First Hype has been iterative. And I know I came here probably before COVID in 2018 and 2019, and seeing the people in here change, the team growing, like you guys have just changed so much over the years, but it hasn't been like, bam, we're changing. It's been all these small incremental changes. And as the business grows, you get better and you review and you analyze. And,
you know, again, getting back to what we were talking about off air at the beginning, the pressure, you know, the pressure to perform, the pressure to succeed. You can't do everything at once, you know. So understanding that, and again, trying to be strategic understanding. One of my favorite quotes, I probably said this last time, that, you know, people overestimate what they can achieve in 1 to 3 years. They drastically overestimate that. And then you take a 10-year view, and we underestimate what we can achieve.
I heard that quote like 2 weeks ago.
It's a bit of a Bill Gates quote. Yeah. And he's not au fait at the moment. But strategically, when you think about that, you're like, where were you 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Versus where you were today. And last year, that was particularly relevant because looking back to 2015, when we just set up the business, to 10 years forward, you're looking at it going, shit, in 10 years, you can achieve a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
In 1 year, to 2 to 3 years, you might look at where you're at and be like, shit, I'm not really going where I want to be going. But again, that consistency, the discipline, the confidence, and not beating yourself up too much, but following a vision, you know, you get to that 10-year period, you turn around and you're like, shit, set up a business, you know, I've built these things, I've built these relationships, I've had children, I've got a meaningful a relationship with my partner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
If you were to map that, like plot it on a graph, do you think there comes a point where the energy starts feeding into more sort of exponential growth? I know every business is going to be different, but do you find that once the machine is moving, you know, you talk about systems before, like do you think there's like a critical point where first 1 to 5 years, you're just figuring out what the fuck you're doing?
Yeah.
And then you get to a point where you've got good people, you've failed and failed and failed, and then you start seeing successes.
Yeah. This is the other thing. It's like the majority of, say, companies that we see as being uber successful have existed for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Before they'd blow up. There's some statistic around that that I've read somewhere. And so, you know, there's really big famous companies and, you know, these founders that have made it, blah, 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 blah. They've been, you know, they've been chipping away somewhere.
The quote that I heard was overnight success is 10 years in the making.
Yeah, it's a great quote. Right. And I can attest to that because before 2015 setting up Hip First Hype, there was another 15 years of grind behind that.
Right? You just didn't walk in and say, oh, we're here now.
There was a huge amount of work that went into, you know, I'd identified pretty early on in my career that I wanted to set something up. So there was a process of building skills, building relationships, yeah. Broader industry connections, and that was purposeful. But there is something beautiful that perseverance, you know, and backing yourself, because, you know, on that daily basis, things can go one of two ways. But if you make a decision that it's going to go a certain way, well, then you're managing that and you're relying on the people around you. You know, I couldn't do any of this without the team we've got, and
yeah,
finding those people that are willing to feed into that and bringing them into that in a meaningful way. You know, we have multiple shareholders in the business now, and really seeking to share the success of Hip First Hype more broadly. You know, we've just had two of our team members buy an apartment in Parklife 2. That's so cool, right? Because that's what
they believe in the product.
I want to go back. You said success before, and everyone works towards succeeding. What does that look like?
Or what today? What does today look like? What does success today look like?
I don't need heaps. Success for me means having the freedom to make the choices that are important to me. And I know, like, I'm not there yet. I'm not where I would like to be in that space. But I'm also someone that gets I'm motivated by rolling my sleeves up and getting into the detail, right? Like I think we said last time when we caught up, success is not, you know, making a bunch of money and checking out and all of a sudden doing the whole five-star thing. That's just not success. But one of the coolest things about EV Hype is, again, the ideas, the energy, the work that the team are doing, the scales that the team are working at on our own projects, bringing Harry into the team last year, an incredibly capable young guy leading design, optimization, design integration on the project, seeking to absolutely maximize each dollar that we're spending for the benefit of the future occupants, but also as part of our process of iterative improvement. We're just in the process of setting up a building services engineering team to sit alongside our sustainability team. Adam, we've got a young guy coming into that team. We're just about to make an announcement next week. But to me, that's just super exciting because now we have the capability to design and certify the electrical and mechanical and hydraulic systems.
So having them work alongside each other.
Yeah, it's everything, right? Yeah, so
it's awesome.
We're now going to be able to design and certify the ELEC and MEC system at scale.
Yep.
That supports the sustainability ambition of both the business and our clients in an integrated way, importantly. So this is the thing at the moment. We're at a stage where kind of over the hump of the capital expenditure now on these systems shows meaningful payback within commercial timeframes.
Yeah.
And so maybe your traditional engineering consultancies haven't put the effort into understanding the potential and or are too risk averse.
I mean, they're also just looking within a box though. They're not looking at the peripheral.
Perhaps. We see an immense opportunity. Yeah. We're really excited. To add that service offering.
Parklife 2, what is it like? What does it look like to someone that's going to live there?
Well, Parklife 2, the coolest thing about Parklife 2 is it's basically the love child of Verizon York, which was our most recently completed project in South Melbourne. Yeah. 20 apartments and Parklife, which is the building that Austin Maynard and Architects had designed and delivered as part of the Nightingale Housing Precinct project in Brunswick, Nightingale Village. And so both sort of best-in-class projects, both, you know, the year prior to, I think Parklife completed a year earlier than Verizon York, that both won all the awards, which is pretty cool, the greater recognition for kind of leading apartments in the Australian context and really bringing together the learnings from both of those projects into one project has been the exciting thing. And Katu and I lived at Verizon York for 3 years. So really that lived experience is such a big part of our process. And there are all sorts of elements within Parklife 2 that are a result of our lived experience.
Like what?
Well, I was just about to say, what's so special about these buildings for us in New York? An apartment there, what distinguishes that from another apartment in the city?
Well, look, design, sustainability, community. When we think about these apartment buildings, it's so much about the spaces in between the actual apartments themselves that drive your experience within the building. So that welcome home moment, how you approach the building, the lobby spaces, the entry thresholds into apartments, the communal spaces within the buildings, how they're laid out. One of the things we took from Verizon York, Katu and I lived on level 4 and we were the only apartment on that level. There was another level above us. And with two young kids, one thing that we did was we used to bring our e-bike up onto our level. And we'd pack the e-bike up with the kids on our level, so right in front of the front door, and then you'd be able to ride the e-bike straight into the lift and straight out of the building, as compared to having a bike room on the ground floor of the building, having to lug all your stuff down into the bike room, load your bike up and head out. So what we've actually brought into Parklife 2 is all the bike parks are on each lobby level. So you come directly out of each of your front doors and your bike straight there and you can load it up and go. So for people who are living in the inner north in Brunswick, why do people ride? we think there's a real convenience element to that. And that hasn't really been done before in a meaningful way. It definitely hasn't been done before the way that we're doing it at Parklife too. That's direct learning from just us having had that experience and then working with Austin Maynard to build it into the design. There's also kind of, unfortunately, you know, security issues. You've got a big bike room on ground floor. It's just a honeypot.
Yeah.
For people, and unfortunately that's been an experience across Melbourne, is, you know, you put all the bikes in one place and you're gonna,
it's like, hey guys, I'll just come grab one.
Mate, it's a honeypot and it's very, very difficult to protect it. So what we're also hoping here is that this is a significantly more secure way for people to store you know, bikes, and e-bikes these days aren't cheap
though.
So that's one example. Another example is, you know, the roof yard for us and your two young kids, again, constant anxiety of, you know, fall risk. We had a cat fall off the building at Faraz and York from level 6. It was okay. Literally fell off the building.
Good God.
Was sunbaking on a ledge and slipped off the bill, like, this shit happens, right? So for us in York, what we're built in is almost like an arbor style detail above the roof yard.
Yeah.
With some fine stainless steel mesh.
Yeah.
It's a detail that Austin Maynard Architects used at Nightingale Village at Parklife. So it brought these elements in, and we feel like that, you know, that would complete the experience.
Yeah.
So you can't just do solar, can you? Is that like, I don't know, in the commercial setting, like that would become hard to generate your own energy if you're using roof space.
There is a conflict between activating a roof yard and maximizing on-site generation. There's definitely a conflict. You know, interestingly, getting into the details, we're right on the 8-level 25-meter effective height limit. So we did try and look to use solar for sun shading on the roof yard.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Can't do it. It basically triggered the 9th level under the NCC.
For that, surely there's a common sense level that would apply, that, oh, they're doing the right thing here. I know that we don't have common sense in our industry, but someone is a...
Someone doesn't get paid for common sense, you know? Like, we create all of this regulation and a whole bunch of people get paid to tick boxes. We're no longer... Common sense died a while ago in Australia, unfortunately.
The solar side of it is, I actually had energy generation written down here on my pad here, and I would be interested to know how lessons from past projects in this current project, and then as you look towards next projects, how, because in my opinion, electrification and energy generation is going to be such a big, relevant thing.
Yeah.
And I think a selling point for the people that want to move into these homes.
Ideally electric there, or are you attempting to be?
100%.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. No fossil fuel free. So, yeah, look, like there's this tension in these sorts of apartment buildings between centralizing your systems and decentralizing your systems. So, and the tension is one of capital expense typically of centralized systems is a little bit higher. Typically you get a trailing benefit. Lower cost through time.
Yeah.
But then you get joint usage. So yeah, hot water is a great example, right? So you go with the centralized heat pump hot water system. It's going to cost you more to install it slightly than decentralized three phase. Yeah.
So just to clarify, centralized heating is one unit
hot water. Yeah.
There's one hot water system in the whole building that feeds every apartment.
Yeah. So.
The big tank.
There's big buffer tanks, right? So for us in York's about that. When the system goes down, the whole building doesn't have hot water. Now, that's no different to a single house when a system goes down, because this happens, right? Like, stuff needs maintenance.
Nice little bit of solidarity there between everyone that's in the apartment.
Well,
culture.
Well, there's no difference if that were to happen in living in a single residence versus in an apartment building. The problem is the problem's amplified because you got 60 residences screaming that they've got no hot water, right? So what we find across our sustainability business is you know, community housing providers, these sorts of people that are managers of large amounts of housing, will prioritize the decentralized system that uses more electricity but is more reliant, arguably, not in practice necessarily. So, you know, what we're always trying to do is work towards the sort of optimized solution, the fit for purpose solution. We are working towards more centralized systems. In Parklife 2, we've got two systems split across 60 apartments.
Yep.
That feed into the centralized ring main. So if one system goes down, you'll just have
lukewarm.
You still get a warm shower versus a cold shower, right? So that these are the sorts of decisions we're making. And we're making it in the detail, and we're working. This is the coolest thing about having the building service engineering team come in, because we're now like really getting into the detail. We're putting a BMS system in. Our ERBs talk to the BMS. We're going to be able to
just for those playing at home. What's BMS?
Building Management System.
Yeah, I thought so it was. Yeah,
basically an ability to scrape all of these systems these days ping data.
Yeah.
To be able to scrape it back to a central location to create an interface dashboard, and for us to be able to track that. Because one cool thing we did from Fries and York was we did 12 months postdoc research, and we had our Better Building Sustainability team in there. 12 months, here's what we designed. How is it performing against what we designed? Nobody does that. We need to do that way more.
Yeah.
That's how you optimize.
But if you're if you've got building management systems, why don't they just do it automatically?
Well, this was the thing. So 5 years ago when we were designing for Fries and York, the sort of light BMS that's now available wasn't really available, slash we didn't have a building services engineering team that was across that information. Yep. So fast forward 5 years, the intent there is to scrape more data to learn more about how the building's operating. Our building services engineering team came up with a solution. It's $50,000. We'll invest that. There is zero kind of immediate commercial incentive to do it. But the longer term play is we want to scrape more accurate data to feed into this iterative improvement process that we're trying to develop that will help us focus on, you know, perhaps we can find a better, you know, energy recovery ventilation system at scale that will deal with, say, the feedback we get from the data from the building in the future.
Because is this BMS tracking, like, humidity levels, temperature, like, energy consumption, everything? You know, like,
the ERV system has capability to track that. The BMS will scrape it back to a single point.
Yeah.
So you've got behind on this poster, and I actually had Hamish's question before we started. You've got 8.5 stars that you're chasing. It says chasing Nat Hurst rating, 8.5 stars.
Yeah.
Is that a legit, because you've got the data now, is that like an accurate 8.5 stars compared to a hypothetical 8.5 stars, if you kind of get where I'm going with this?
Yeah, look, like, Nat Hurst is really interesting. Like, obviously it's about thermal envelope, so it's about how the envelope of a building keeps you, you know, cooler in summer and warmer in winter, basically by how it's insulated. In really, really simple terms. And, we have set ourselves an ambition of an 8.5 star average target. Some of the apartments are performing at like 9.5 star. I think we don't yet have our minimum because we haven't done the full analysis for building permit. We're just going through that at the moment. But Fries and York, the minimum was 7.4 stars.
What's the average apartment complex that might go up? Of the, say, it's just, I don't know, John next door is putting up an apartment complex.
Yeah.
What would they just be getting?
Average? Well, the NTC currently, what is it, under the new NTC, it's 7, isn't it?
So that will apply to commercial buildings as a NAD HERS.
Yeah, well, because they're residential.
Yeah.
I thought, is it NAB HERS? I thought it went to something different.
Our neighbours, commercial assets, but the cool thing about NatHERS is one of our, actually, Pippa, who I study architecture with, she's leading a research project for CSIRO. So she's looking at about, I think it's about 450 apartments, sample apartments that are all rated. So they're all NatHERS rated. So I think built after 2011. So she's testing the performance of those apartments right now.
Wow, that's
to gather a data set to feed into the CSIRO engine that supports the NatHERS modeling.
Yep.
Because current NatHERS modeling is based on assumptions. It's not based on actual performance data. So her project will feed in performance data to further optimize the model. So what we should see is a closing of the gap between what we assume at design phase and what actually gets built. That's going to probably bring...
So arguably NatHERS then, or NABERS, is going to be a more valuable tool, more relevant tool.
Right. And her project will make NatHERS a more accurate tool. Yeah.
And you've got a team that's pretty big on Passive House as well.
Yeah.
And Passive House is all about testing and verifying.
Yeah.
Are you bringing any of that testing and verifying into the NatHERS model?
Not so much into the NatHERS model, but into our practice. Yes.
Yeah.
So we had Marcus Strang from our team run a Passive House feasibility model on the preliminary design for Parklife 2. We're going to do that on all of our projects. Unfortunately, what we have at Parklife 2 is a building with quite a large amount of external surface area and two cores, so two vertical circulations. It's very, very difficult to achieve Passive House standard. But what we're also doing in the detail is persecuting cost-benefit analysis on details, on insulation details, on thermal bridging details for the building. And we're looking at all across a raft of details, bringing that capability from Rob and Marcus in our team to analyze whether or not we should be doing certain things.
Like, we still blow a door test the whole complex?
We won't do the whole complex. We'll do a sample of apartments that the team identifies being representative. And then we'll use that data to feed into the performance data set we get to help us understand.
So Rob and Marcus are using similar approaches to what we're doing when we're certifying a building for risk analysis, really.
Yeah, risk and optimization. So we build a dynamic model for our project. And we use that.
I'd love to see that.
Data, that's cool, yeah. And so we built that. We don't have to build it. We built it. And then we feed that information in again to our building services engineering team. So, we were making decisions on where to locate windows within apartments. We were running glare analysis, daylight analysis to help. And we were running a collaboration between architecture and performance. So having to make certain decisions on where windows are located, we wanted to make sure that, yes, it looked good architecturally, but also it didn't mean that we were creating a glare problem or reducing daylight too much.
Yeah.
So that caused conflict between, say, your design performance team and then the architect being like, well, we want it to look like this now. And no, it doesn't perform though.
It could cause conflict, but because we're very clear on our objective, which is to build the best possible apartments we can for the people that live in the building, that's driving everything, then, a considered compromise is something that I reiterate to the team always. You know, we always, you know, we're not artists, right? The architects aren't artists. So we are working through a process of considered compromise. So,
yeah.
You know, we're respectful of the way a building looks, right? It's that's the beauty of architecture. It's really valuable. But it also, you can't have the way a building looks leading to perverse outcomes that are reasonably avoidable for occupants. Yeah.
Well, I think I've said this before, you know, and this is the challenge I say to architects, you know, use Passive House is a design constraint, just like a house next door or the size of the block.
Or your nine levels.
Like it's if you go right, performance is a design consideration or something that's going to drive how something looks, then that's your problem to solve as an architect. That's why you're engaged for the project.
What's your... So are you going to live in this one as well?
We won't. Katsu and I and the boys won't. We kind of got to a point where Massimo's in primary school now and we're going to stay where we are. But what we are doing is we will continue the HVH hotel concept from Fraser and York. So Fraser and York, we had a We have a two-bedroom apartment available to lease. It's been really successful. Really, that's set up. So I don't know how this thing's about high performance. You guys will know this from your day-to-day is if you've never experienced it, it's very difficult to value it.
Yep.
And so with HVH Hotel, what we're trying to create is an opportunity for more and more people to experience better and therefore to demand it. The best analogy I have is hydronic heating. You know, back in the day, it was incredibly, when I was working in building, it's very difficult to convince someone to pay the extra for the hydronic heating. People who had it won't even question the expense. And once people have installed it,
they won't change.
They won't change, right? The thing about building a high-performance building is you don't necessarily need hydronic heating anymore because, like, you really don't need that heat.
In Australia.
So same idea, right? We wanted to create this apartment that people could stay in. It's a busy, noisy location. When you're inside, you're completely insulated from that noise and energy. You get a great night's sleep and, you know, it's that light bulb aha moment. And the number of people we get emailing us afterwards saying, oh my God, I can't believe how well I slept.
Yep.
Builders, architects, let's be real for a second. We've all seen what happens when a cheap wrap fails. The callbacks, the moisture damage, the headaches. For me, wrapping a house with ProClimate is a non-negotiable of any build we do. It's about building tight, ventilating right. And when you use ProClimate's tapes and membranes, you're giving your client a premium watertight envelope that prevents the building from moisture issues. It's faster to install, tougher on site, and it means you can walk away from a job knowing that the frame is protected for decades. Don't cut corners on your envelope. Visit proclimate.com.au today or head to the Instagram page at proclimate.au.
So that's interesting. I can't believe this has never clicked for me before. And I know we have a lot of potential clients listening to this podcast. How can people book into this hotel? How do they get access to it? Because everyone asks me, is there one I can go and stay? And I'm like, yeah, John Burke's got one out in Whoop-Whoop, but there's one in the middle of Melbourne. And it's not a passive house, is it? But it's got dedicated ventilation. It's got
HRV.
Yeah.
Plus Nat HERS, all of the critical bits.
Yeah,
I'm not certified passive house, so not down to the air change requirements of passive house, not dealing with a number of the thermal break requirements, but across the board a high performance apartment.
Yes,
very, very good standard.
Yeah,
and importantly, I guess, symptomatic of the kind of benefits that you receive.
But a good experience for someone to go, oh, I can't get it now.
Blow your mind. And for us, it's been an advocacy tool too. So I think now we're coming on about 700 people have stayed.
Oh.
And for us, that's the impact piece, right? That's the more people that stay, the more light bulb moments we have, the more people we have out in the market that are coming to you guys, coming back to us saying, I want better. We've just used this space as an advocacy piece. So I've had government ministers in the space from both sides. That's the important bit.
Yeah,
it's like if all we're doing is talking to the people that are already on board, what's the point?
Yeah, yes.
From both sides. So I've had the federal housing minister from the opposition in, really important.
I think he's coming on a podcast.
We have got
one. No,
yeah, Torian.
Torian, yeah.
Take people inside, close the door, lock it, got a nice bink front door. Mate. Silent.
Yeah.
And that's people are like, whoa,
Yes. So like, you can hear the suction on the door and it's like, and you're like, and then you cannot hear anything. So I did this exercise the other day. I listened to a TED talk and it was all about sometimes just stopping and listening to quiet. So I did it in my house and my house, our ears were kind of like ringing because I literally started trying to hear anything I could outside. Trying to hear a bird or I couldn't even hear a car drive past.
Yeah.
And it's so quiet.
That's pretty cool.
So it's awesome. The comfort levels are insane. Like just, you're not fluctuating from hot to cold to hot to cold. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I think you do have to get a very light doona because it's too hot.
Yeah. And what an amazing. Mate, I slept in a sheet through winter.
Yeah.
Literally.
It was 45 degrees. And I'm going to say this, Nicole's going to kill me. It's 45 degrees last week. Our house had a 22.5.
Yeah.
And she's like, she called me. She's like, oh, I'm a little bit too cold. I had a shower to warm up.
I mean, I want to give HipFirst Hype Hotel a plug. How can someone book into that?
HipFirst Hotel, just on our website. It's on the website. So we're going to do it again in Brunswick at Parklife 2 because, again, just the more people that are staying and experiencing better, the more people we have out in the world that are demanding it.
And you've got a huge pre-sale rate on Parklife 2 already.
Yeah, we've sold half the building.
And is that, you reckon that is related to that evidence of people who potentially stayed? Like, have you even studied this? Some who stayed and go, no, I want one. I'm buying it because of that experience.
Yeah, like we've had a couple of people.
That's crazy. But that just pays for itself in itself.
Yeah, well, but the other cool thing is too, we also have the ability to offer people a stay. So if they're thinking of buying in Parklife 2, we can give them a night at South Melbourne, say, hey, go and check it out.
All right, if there's any clientele listening to this and you're on the fence of whether or not you want to build with Sanctum Homes, mention this podcast and I will pay for you to go and stay in HipFirst Hype Hotel.
And also, like, you know, we want you to come in and we don't mind if you run into residents within Verrazzano York and have a conversation. We're not trying to hide anything, you know.
Yeah, 6 years.
You will meet people. You can stay the night. You will meet people who live within the building. It's their home. And, you know, the important thing to acknowledge here is, like, you're kidding yourself if you think everything's perfect. It's just not reality. But that's not the point. The point is that, you know, the intent from HipFee Hype is to achieve the best possible outcome we can. We do everything we possibly can to set buildings up for success. And what we end up having is a group of really great people who come in and become custodians of the building, and they're there to take care of the building and build community amongst themselves through time. We're here to create the settings for that to evolve through time. And you'll meet some really great people in the building at Verrazzano York. It's awesome community.
Do you vet the people that live there and go, I don't think you're right for this community?
We sell our own projects. So Katia is head of sales. That's her gig. I kind of do the building thing. She sells and she's part of the community management.
I really wanted to get her on, but she's not here at the moment. I was actually wanted to have a chat to her about that real estate versus the traditional approach.
Yeah, look, she's got a really interesting perspective on this, and she's really great with that side of things. And, you know, look, no, we don't curate. Perhaps from time to time, you know, we're a little bit slow to get back to people who stand out as perhaps not being a great fit. But all of this is self-selecting as well, right? Like, we market a certain way, we speak a certain way. If that doesn't appeal to you, you're not coming to us.
And you're getting a cross-section of owner occupiers and investors
of
Parklife 2. Are they all owner occupiers?
Yeah, of the 30 sales, 29 are owner occupiers. One investor is a family friend. And they're buying an apartment for their kids in 10 years.
So it's still there, since stuff, yeah.
Hey, that's different game.
Right.
So, yeah, we almost exclusively get owner-occupiers, buyers. We don't say no to investors because at the end of the day, we just want people who are invested in the building buying, whether they're an owner-occupier or an investor, yeah? They want to buy a quality asset.
Probably the reason I asked whether or not there was investors there, probably not more from a, trying to encourage capitalism or anything like that, but it's more you've got this rental market out there that doesn't necessarily have an opportunity or have the means to buy something like this.
Oh, yeah.
And is there an opportunity for them to rent one of these? And that only comes about by either, you know, you guys keeping some and renting it, or they're an investor coming in and renting it out.
From a purely commercial perspective, better quality assets are going to outperform the market. So the market average is made up of good and bad, and you land in the middle, right? So whenever you're buying a quality asset, you're always going to outperform the market average. So that makes financial sense, yeah? And then there are some people who give a shit about if they are going to be, you know, a landlord, they give a shit about the renters.
Yep.
And so, you know, you're buying a really good quality apartment, like from
their self, right?
From a selfish perspective, you're going to get a better return than average.
Yep.
Yeah. By definition.
Yep.
And then you're also going to be doing the right thing because your renters are going to have a really high quality experience. So like they're the sorts of investors that
When we expect to start?
Starting in March.
So because legislation changes in July around developer bonds for...
Yeah.
Yep. Does that affect you at all?
Yeah, it's going to be part of our process. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you like
Is that already enacted or is that coming July 1?
It's coming, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And that's just, from my understanding, 2% you would have to hold to
5 years.
That's a year. So, which is why I want to ask you this is because you said about building better. What I'd love to know is like the average apartment, and we won't know this, refuse, and how much of that developer bond's actually being accessed by rectification works compared to yours?
What I know, from Fraser New York, we had no major defects.
Which is crazy.
Zero.
Which is
a toss that too. It's a
nice, much hurdle.
Builder.
Builder and our collaborative process.
Yeah.
So we don't have a third party project manager sitting between us and the builder. We project manage the build ourselves.
Yeah.
And culturally, we exist through that process to collaborate with the builder.
Yep.
To get the best outcome we can, you know.
So just trust, you trust them.
We have to, but we're working together to achieve an outcome. We want the builder finishing on time, if not early. We want the builder building the best quality outcome we can. That's good for our customers and it's good for the builder.
Well, that's good for your offer, it's good for your brand.
At the end of the day, if the builder's losing money, everybody loses.
Yeah.
And if we're sitting there with a stick beating the builder up, how is that creating a dynamic that's objectives focused? Again, getting back to the objective, we do things like we put our marketing renders up in the smoko sheds because like there's a lot of people involved in building our buildings. We want the end, we want the cleaner. You know, this is a little bit idealistic, right? But I want the cleaner, you know, who has a very small part in the process, seeing the beautiful end product that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And I want them in the smoker shed seeing that on the wall so that, and hopefully there's a bit of a rub there, right? Like it's setting a standard. You know, I walk around site, I say good day to guys working on site and go and have a chat to people, you know, the actual people that are doing a job. I believe that that makes a difference. And not everybody's going to bring that. And that's frustrating at times. Yeah.
You're never going to please everyone.
But you're also giving everyone the opportunity to, though.
But I give them the opportunity to bring their best.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And we respect that and we build that into our team as well. So that dynamic with the builder, mate, we're not there to rap knuckles. Doesn't work.
Can you talk about the builder that you've engaged?
Yeah, we're going to work with a company called Marks from John Marks.
We had a conversation about the builder before we started and, you know, it sounds like they're definitely the right builder for the project. And what I'd love to see more of these bigger builders do off the back of projects like this is see that there is value in these buildings. And yeah. I want to start, because I know you're on our case all the time. Scale up. And I'm like,
Sorry.
maybe. But yeah, like
you just resources. Like we'd be happy to share our experience on a smaller scale and be like,
yeah,
like, you are jumping into the deep end to some extent and you kind of take a risk, but the risk is so worth it.
Well, we're going to open site in 3 weeks. You should bring them along.
The whole thing about Sustainable Builders Alliance, what you guys are doing with this podcast, like capacity building, right? Like what we're trying to do with HVH Hotel, capacity building with 700 people now that have experienced better, like capacity building in the industry, knowledge building, capacity building. But Mark's gone, look, they won the tender. We ran a tender. We had 4 builders tender. And it's remarkable, you know, Melbourne's a relatively small ecosystem. It's remarkable how much difference you get even across 4 builders. And we selected the 4 builders strategically because they had experience across varying scales of the kind of project that we were seeking to build. Our investment partner for the project, I should say, is Cvas Property. So we have quite a stringent procurement requirement through the tender phase. But we ran that process and you know, our assessment matrix is not just price. Price is a bit and it's weighted and it's well below 50%. We've got a reality there. And if we can't get to the price, project doesn't go ahead. But, you know, demonstrated capability and sustainability, safety, culture, these sorts of things come into our selection criteria seriously and meaningfully.
Yep.
And, you know, probably one of the things that stood out for Marxcon is, you know, that they built now a number of Nightingale projects, and through building those projects, they've built capacity. They were one of only 2 of the 4 builders that could demonstrate having dealt with HRVs at any meaningful scale.
Yeah.
They were the only builder that could demonstrate having dealt with a high performance window package at the scale we need to build at.
Okay. They were, again, one of only two builders that could demonstrate having achieved air tightness performance. Four builders strategically selected who've had experience. Yeah, so we've still got a long way to go, particularly in the HRV space at scale. There's like bugger all capability in the industry. That will change. So the projects that we're doing, Parklife 2 gets built. You know, we know through our sustainability business, there are quite a few Homes Victoria and community housing projects being built right now that in 2 to 3 years' time will mean that there's mechanical subcontractors out in the market who've delivered 100 apartments with HRA. There are trades that have installed that at an individual level. There are project managers with the experience of managing a team to implement, test, verify those systems. It's all about capacity building in the industry, you know, takes time. But again, getting back to that point, 1 to 3 years versus 10 years.
Yeah. So what's the most important thing that we did discuss today that we should have talked about?
We could sit here for like 3-4 hours and we wouldn't stop. There's so much to talk about in the industry. And like, we didn't even really get onto what you guys are doing and how we can translate that and scale it. You know, the information, like bringing people onto site the way that you guys do is awesome. I really like that. I think that's so powerful.
Can I do that with Parklife too and do an open house? Like, it might be a little bit more.
Oh yeah, we still do it with Fraser and York.
In construction though?
That's a whole different level.
It's a safety thing, yeah. But like, could you do like a certain section of it to be like, guys, this is what industry can do? Because we do it at ours.
I think we can do an industry focus one, and maybe we could have a think about doing that together, yeah. Opening it up more broadly, all sorts of challenges.
But I think an industry focus one's fine though.
Yeah.
That's what because you can think, because if you get a half a dozen or government, half a dozen other developers to show them that the nuts and bolts of this, it's still a building, it's just different elements.
Yeah, there's definitely a role there. We do that more indirectly through our sustainability business. So we do that strategically. We actively bring clients in and show them through the process. But I do, yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Because you could just you'd reach out to all the government officials in that area, all the council members, a few builders, a few architects, and just be like, even your biggest competitor, if there's one.
Yeah.
Come along. I want to talk about this.
I want to get you guys into trade schools. I want to get you guys giving presentations at TAFEs.
And so SBA has very slowly working on some really good connections in with Melbourne Poly.
Yep.
They're at the back off the base of our first set. Yeah, chat with them.
Yep. So I know someone on the board of Melbourne Poly. Maybe we could connect a couple of dots there and get that happening a bit quicker.
We've got a C. Well, I met the CEO and we were dealing with, I can't remember his name, but yeah, it's
all guy.
It's happening. Yeah, it's happening. We had him on the podcast.
Yeah, I
won't mention names on the podcast, but let's keep chatting about that, because I think young people, you know, what you guys are doing is so inspiring and you know, charismatic and great leaders, and you know, getting you guys in front of some young people instead of, you know, old crusty lecturers.
That's a legislation change though. At the moment, for us to go talk, we need to go do a diploma and.
Education. We have to do lecture. Liam, if people want to buy one of these, how do they go about doing that?
Again, our website's the best place. We'd love to hear from people. There's all the information. Give us a shout out, Katia and or Kirsty will come back and people can have a chat.
So these are high performance, they're high star rating, they're all electric, they're ERVs, they're fresh, they're healthy. You know,
and it's hibbehype.com, don't you?
Hibbehype.com. All of the above, but look, the other thing I should say about this project is, and probably one of the things that makes it ultimately so unique, is it's on a park. So Clifton Park's on your doorstep. There's nothing between you and the park. So you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get to live in a high-performance apartment with a park on your front doorstep. So the park is your backyard.
That's Parklife?
as our Spark Life. That's where it comes from. The other thing is too, where our studio, where we're currently sitting doing this podcast, we're moving our team into the ground floor of Buck Life too.
Oh, awesome.
That's another thing for us, like anchoring the building. You know, we're not a developer that cuts and runs. We're a developer that takes a position in the life of the buildings. Our job is to hand the building over to the occupants. They're ultimately the custodians, but we're part of that process. And having an opportunity to have our studio in the building, that'll be a really big part of our continued learning process as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump onto our MEGT Mindful Moments, sponsored by MEGT, Australia's largest apprenticeship provider.
Now, Matt, I asked you before we started this podcast whether or not you would feel comfortable talking about this. And I think mental health is something that is so important broadly in our world, but I think it's actually a big problem in our industry. And you've experienced something in the last 24 hours, which, you know, I'm deeply sorry for. And if you want to share. Yeah,
so I won't go into too much detail. We lost one of our tradies, sadly, took their own life for the day, very close to us. So what I want to get out of this is, like, why did we start this podcast, Hamish?
Well, I think one of the biggest motivations was, it's called The Mindful Builder. You know, we were coming on, you know, you have a history of anxiety. I've got a history of anxiety. You know, I know that everyone I talk to in the industry at one time or another has had a problem with anxiety or mental health. And I felt like the position now that we have in the industry, we had a microphone to like talk to this and share our experiences.
Yeah. So I come into this, we're not doing enough. As an industry, as a group, like, it is a huge issue and a lot more needs to be done. So apprentices, this is mainly focused on you guys, but it's okay to ask for help. Like, doing your apprenticeship is tough. It's not easy. It's difficult. You will want to give up. I wanted to give up in my third year. Your third year is, I'd say, the hardest year of all your apprenticeship years. There are resources everywhere for you to reach out to should you need help. And that doesn't need to be directly to your boss, family, friends. Don't be afraid to speak up. Like, we've even had Hamish and I, we've had people reach out to us directly through our social media channels, through the podcast, to be like, I need help. What do I do? So there are resources everywhere that you can reach out to and ask for help. Don't be afraid to do that, because I promise you that you're loved, that there's people around you that will support you. And then this could be triggering for people, and it could be confronting, but we need to stop hiding behind these issues. Like, more needs to be done. If you're someone in the government level listening to this, you need to be better and do more. We need to solve this, not just tick a few boxes on a piece of paper that make it sound fine and dandy, because there's people hurting every day.
And I think on a personal level, like, just to give a TX a shout out. So TX, it stands for This Is a Conversation Starter. You might have seen them in really loud shirts. By no way affiliated with this podcast at all, but they have a free counselling service. And they
to my team right yesterday morning.
They exist to the blue-collar workers who unfortunately have a higher, statistically have a higher chance of taking their own lives. So they have an amazing free resource for you.
And, yeah, like, life can get better. You just got to work at it. So don't want to put a downer on it, but I'd rather talk about real stuff that's true and not hide behind that. And that's what both me and you set out at the start of this podcast, is not only to talk about building better, but building mindfully. And the mindful moment, I think, sort of sums it up. So, yeah.
No, I'm sure what you're doing. It's good. It's great to have some leadership within the industry. And like we said, right, this disseminating learnings and ideas and passion and you know, dealing with really challenging subjects. Unfortunately, we're just living in a world where everyone's at each other's throats. You know, it's like just kind of taking a little bit of a step back and living in the moment a little bit.
We're all people at the end of the day,
regardless of which side you sit on.
Yeah, I think we just leave it at that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.